If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back, everybody. By the way, thanks again, RJ. It's the first day of February 2010. We've already got 1 month in the bag, 11 to go. I don't know what it is, man. It seems like when I turned back the clock of memory, and it really seems like it took forever from when I was a little kid to graduate high school. And I graduated when I was 17. So the first 17 years just seemed like they drug on and on. I mean, like it was a good thing. But there are many years of my life since graduation, I probably couldn't recollect one or two instances that happened in an entire year. It's crazy. So anyhow, just another month behind us, racing towards the ultimate death, as someone once told me. Quince sent in an email asking me what I thought about the Jeff Cooper idea of the Scout Rifle, the Jeff Cooper Steyr Scout Rifle. First of all, let's talk a little bit about a Scout Rifle. A Scout Rifle, it's a class of kind of a general purpose rifle, and it was designed and promoted by Jeff Cooper back in the early 80s. And these would be like a bolt action, kind of a carbine size, like a shorter size, typically in a .308 caliber, you know, a 30 caliber gun with a short action. So that would be defined as a .308. And less than 1 meter, which is about 38 and a half inches. And it would also weigh less than 3 kilograms. By Jeff's definition. Now, what a kilogram is, I don't know. I know that if it's 3 big bags of cocaine, if it's more than that, I don't know. Yeah, maybe they weigh them in South Florida. I'm not sure. 3 kilograms, whatever that is. But it would be less than 38 and a half inches, pardon me. It would also have iron sights as well as be able to be fitted with an optic, generally a forward-mounted optic. To give you an idea of a forward-mounted optic, it would go forward of the action. Oftentimes, if you would see a handgun with a scope on it, that would be nearly the same eye relief as that of a Scout rifle. It would literally mount forward of the action, forward of the chamber. That's what a Scout scope would be. But you'd also have backup iron sights you could use if the optic goes down. And it would also usually be like a lower powered, like maybe 4 power or less, maybe even down to 1.5 power. Steyr, Ruger, and Savage, several other gun makers, are making now Scout rifles that roughly match the specs that Cooper put together back in the early 80s. And the Steyr Scout rifle, they actually went, 3 kilograms, 6.6 pounds, 6.5 pounds. If you have it loaded with accessories, including a scope, it would be about 7.75 pounds. Okay, so under 8 pounds with all the accessories fully loaded, including slings. So when Cooper came out with, or went to work with Steyr, and they came out with the Steyr Scout rifle, he said that it was, I think, it was 88% or 89% his vision of a Scout rifle. Jeff loved the rifle. As a matter of fact, they unveiled it at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas, I don't know, maybe 12 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was. Somehow or another, a live round found itself into a .308 version. Somebody picked one up off a table and was pointing it up towards, you know, up high, up towards like the crook of the roof where it met the wall. And then went to get a dry press and bang, torched off around right there in the Las Vegas Convention Center. The guy dropped the rifle and took off. They never did find out who it was. But in the Steyr Scout rifle that Cooper had an actual real life hand in, several neat things. First of all, it came with a 3-point chin sling. Sometimes people are also referred to as the CW sling. The Ching Sling was designed by Eric Ching, who has been an instructor at Gunsight for some time. I'm not sure if he's still there, but he was an instructor at Gunsight for some time. They now have the Ching Sling 2, which is only a 2-point mounted sling. But the Ching Sling actually has 3 mounting points. One forward, standard where it would go, right up front, the other one in the back. The third one would be back towards the magazine, well, the internal magazine box, if you will, on the gun. The accuracy, spec'd out, would be a 2 minute of angle at 100 yards, you know, 2 minute of angle, 3-shot group. Now, I'll tell you this. I own a Steyr Scout rifle. As a matter of fact, mine is the Steyr Scout Tactical, which means it's finished in matte black. It doesn't have any of the gray on it. That's the only difference. And that probably cost me an extra $150. Who knows? I've had this rifle for probably 7 years, maybe eight. I think I've had it for about 7 years. I got it with the loopholed 4-power forward-mounted scout scope. It does have the pop-up iron sights, if you will, although they're not actually made of iron. And mine's chambered 308. They chambered this gun in, if I can remember right, they had it in the 223, the 243, the 308, and the 376 Steyr cartridge. Now, what is a 376 Steyr? It was designed by Steyr specifically for this gun. In Africa, if you want to hunt the big five, any of the big five, which would be, what, elephant, rhino, lions, tigers, hippo, elephant, what, something like that. If you want to hunt the big five, you can, by law, in all of the African countries where you can do this, you have to have a minimum of a 375 caliber rifle, which would put it at the 375 H&H Magnum. And if you ever read anything on the, and if you read the chapter on African game hunting by Jim Carmichael in his book, The Book of the Rifle, you'll realize the 375 really isn't up to snuff for some of the biggest, baddest versions of these biggest, baddest animals. So the 376 Steyr is the 375 bullet from the 375 H&H in a shorter casing with far less powder and far less pressure. So it is technically legal to shoot at with the big five with the 376 Steyr out of this gun. However, it is morally wrong. Because as a sportman, what you want to do when you're out there as a sportsman hunting animals is you want to have a good, clean, fast kill. You do not want the animal to suffer. Imagine this 376 under-pressured Steyr, and you end up shooting large, dangerous game, and the round does not have the effect that it should to put it down. You now spend the rest of the day hunting large, wounded, dangerous game. Not a good position to be in. So, great gun. I mean, it would be good on in North America for hunting things such as maybe elk, moose, or bear. But when you get into something really big in Africa, 376 Steyr cartridge is just underpowered. It's underpressured. Why they went ahead and did it, I don't know. Anyhow, I'll leave that alone for now. I've said enough. My gun is chambered in 308. Okay. The other cool thing about this particular gun is it has, you know what, I think I said that the Scout Scope had a 4-power. It's actually 2.5-power. My mistake. I just had a little recollection on that. It's 2.5-power forward-mounted Scout Scope. Is kind of the standard, it's a standard magnification for a scout scope. Some are more, some are as high as 4-power, some are as low as 1.5. The standard used and the loophole that comes on the Steyr Scout Jeff Cooper package is the 2.5-power loophole. The guns run about $2,600, $2,700, something like that, with the scope on it. You can get them without the scope, put your own on there. The entire top edge of the gun is a long Weaver rail. So you can put a standard scope on it as well. Matter of fact, right now, my gun has a Shepherd P2 scope on it. I have two scopes just for that gun. What a fantastic gun. It comes with an integral bipod in the stock. You push a little button and you pull out the bipod. The bipod ends up being about, maybe 13 inches in length. So you can go down into the prone. It has a 5-round removable box magazine. It has a second 5-round removable box magazine tucked into the stock. It's in the buttstock. It's not where it would meet your shoulder with the recoil pad. It's just underneath that, so it's facing down. It's in the same configuration, facing forward, similar sort of elevation as the one that's in the action, but it's in the buttstock. So you can fire your five rounds, or your six if you have one in the chamber as well. Take that magazine out. Take the one out of the buttstock, put it into the action, put the empty one that came out of the action into the buttstock, and rock and roll, you got five more rounds. So the gun's very, very well designed. It is a very thin barrel, but it is fluted, so it has a lot of surface area for cooling. The barrel's also fully floated. With match ammo, 168 grain Sierra boat tail hollow point loaded ammo, with match precision ammo, my gun holds about a half inch group. It's a fantastically accurate gun. As a matter of fact, it's lightweight, deployable, it's in such good shape. I have the Ching Sling on mine. It is such a good gun. It could easily be purchased just the way it is and used as a sniper rifle or a designated marksman rifle in an urban setting. So think about that. We're going to talk a little bit more about it after the break, so stay tuned. I'm your host right here on 2A Radio. I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Hi, guys. Welcome back. So we're talking about Scout rifles here. With the Steyr Scout rifle, when they chambered it in the 376 Steyr, they named it instead of the Scout, they call it the Dragoon Scout because it was a little larger, a little bit out of spec. They just wanted to be able to sell more of the base gun. That ended up going away because there wasn't much of a desire for that. But as I understand, you can look at some of the Dragoon Steyr Scout rifles. They're making them in other large calibers. It's a little bit longer, in some cases a little bit heavier than the spec for a Scout rifle, but they are available. And the one that was offered in the .223 caliber was kind of dubbed the Cub Scout because it didn't fit the .30 caliber bill. The .308 is fantastic. That is my go-to hunting gun. I really have two different guns that I would go to as hunting guns right off of the bat. The very first one is the Steyr Scout, and it had better be something pretty special and out of line for me to grab something other than that as a hunting rifle. It is lightweight. It is short. It's easy to carry. It is versatile. It is adaptable. And there are accessories you can buy for the gun and things you can do to the gun. There's a way to adapt it to take a 10-round magazine. I've never seen a need to do any of that garbage. The gun is nearly perfect the way it is. All I did was buy a Ching Sling and put it on. And then I also bought a second scope, this P2, in case I want to do some longer range shooting, such as, like if I'm going to go to Idaho or maybe Kansas or Nebraska, something like that, where there are longer range open areas for shooting. Well, then I would rather have the P2 scope that has a BDC, a bullet drop compensator, built into the glass. But if it's going to be something within 100 to 200 yards, actually up to about 250, then the Scout scope, if that's the longest range I'm going to be faced with, the Scout scope's going to be on the gun. That forward-mounted 2.5 power, that's what I'm going to have. It's just a great gun, and you don't need to put anything else on there. There are other companies that are making these guns. You have Savage, they make their Scout. It's the Model 10 FCM Scout. It does come with the Savage kind of a proprietary AccuTrigger that they have. It is a nice gun. It's a little under 7 pounds. It has a length of just under 40 inches, so it's a little bit longer than... It has a 20.5-inch free-floated barrel as opposed to the 19-inch free-floated barrel out of the Savage. It's also got a little bit longer length of pull on the stock, which puts it a little over the 38.5-inch mark, the 1-meter mark. But it's a lot less expensive, too. It's right around $800. They now are also offering some special orders that you can do with the Savage Scout. I'm a big fan of Savage rifles. So you can check those out. They have them in, 243, the 260 Remington, 7mm 08 Remington, the 308, of course, the 338 Federal, and the 358 Winchester. So many options, whatever you want to go with. If you like the design of the gun, a true scout rifle is in 308. But it's a great design. Like, if you want to go with 243, if that's what you hunt, I'm surprised somebody hasn't made it in the 270. That's a fantastic deer round. It's a fantastic deer gun. Also on the market is the Ruger Frontier. They have, it's the M77 Mark II Frontier rifle is what they offer. 7mm 08, is one of the options that they have. It's a good gun as well. Springfield Armory came out with some semi-auto versions of that, namely in the SOCOM 16 and the SOCOM 2, which are variants of the M1A. They are within length, but the thing is they're very heavy. I mean, an empty SOCOM 16, which is the lightest of the two, is over 9 pounds. It's about 9.5 pounds. You start adding ammunition and any sort of optic to this thing, you're toting around a good 11 or 12-pound rifle. And it's very short and compact. It's like, I don't know, hauling around a midget or something. It's just short, compact, heavy. That's just the way it is. There have been many companies that have started offering these pseudo-style scout rifles that are out there. You can find those on the market. Winchester Model 94 and 30-30. The Ruger Mini platforms, and they have some in the 223 and then the 6.8 SPC, as well as in the Mini 14, the Mini 30, 7.62x39, those are kind of close. But I got to tell you, when it comes to a scout rifle, the Steyr Scout is fantastic. I hope I have taken the last 25 minutes to answer your question. The Steyr Scout rifle is the preferred scout rifle out there. It does cost more. It is fantastic. It fits basically all of the criteria for the most part of Jeff Cooper's design, and it works. I have several hundred rounds through mine, and it's easy to deal with, it's easy to clean, it's easy to work with, and it's just all around a fantastic rifle. The only thing I need to do now is get the barrel threaded with an adapter, because it's kind of thin, so I could put a suppressor on it. It's just a bitchin' gun. Guys, stay tuned. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
By dictators since 1917. The 2A radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. Now, you guys might be in a different boat than I am. I'm going to talk about something that's a little controversial, which is just happens to be the way I am. If you don't like it, turn off your radio. I'm going to talk a little bit about racism and the garbage that goes with it. Gun control obviously has its, or I shouldn't say obviously, it oftentimes has its roots in racism. And when, quite often, the one group that cries racism more often than any other are the blacks, African Americans, whatever you want to call them. I'm going to use the term blacks. That particular race of people have used so many different versions of what to call themselves, be it Negro, colored, black, colored person, person of color, African-American, black, whatever. I'm just going to use black because it's a single syllable. With that out of the way. Oftentimes, you get more violent cities, such as Washington, D.C. Most of the people who actually live in Washington, D.C. and experience crime in the predominantly black neighborhoods, lower income, high density population. Now, that's not just in D.C. That's also in Detroit. It's also in Chicago. It's also in New York. It's also in L.A. You get a high concentration of urban area, highly minority populated. You have more crime and more gun crime than other parts of the city that don't fit that demographic I just described. Therefore, anti-gun groups such as the Violence Policy Center and the Brady Campaign to steal your guns and screw you out of your Second Amendment rights, I think that's their official name, do their best to actually take all of the census from just those areas that I described a moment ago and use that as crime numbers. Basically what they're saying is, blacks shouldn't have guns. Now here's an idea. Here's a law back in from the Reconstruction era back in Louisiana. This was during slavery times. Here was a law they passed. It says, no Negro who is not in the military service shall be allowed to carry firearms or any kind of weapon within the parish. Parish there would be like a county anywhere else. Without the special written permission of his employers, approved and endorsed by the nearest and most convenient chief of patrol, meaning police. Here's one out of Mississippi. No freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, which is half black, half white, not in the military service of the United States government, and not licensed so to do by the Board of Police or of his or her county, shall keep or carry firearms of any kind. Now, such laws, of course, were quite a boon to the KKK, who could have had more confidence, obviously, in their victims' inability to fight back effectively. So you take the KKK that was strong back in this era, and they don't like the idea of freed slaves. They certainly don't want them armed. Then you get the other good old boys that are either part of the KKK that are in office to pass these things or enforce these things in the police realm. Or they're at least sympathetic to the plight of the KKK, not liking the freed slaves. And they pass these laws. Now, why is that? It's because the freed slaves, the blacks, did not enjoy citizenship as the whites did at the time, which is why, hence, the 14th Amendment was introduced that created a second, an additional class of citizen. So, here's a piece out of the 14th Amendment. To these privileges and immunities, whatever they may be, for they are not and cannot be fully defined in the entire extent and the precise nature, to these should be added the personal rights guaranteed by the first 8 amendments of the Constitution, such as the freedom of speech and the freedom of press, the right of the people peaceably to assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances, a right pertaining to each and all of the people, the right to keep and bear arms. Da da da. So, we now had it to where the laws that I read out of Louisiana and Mississippi back in the day could no longer be enforced. They were unconstitutional. Okay, interestingly, and it has already been pointed out, it seems that the Violence Policy Center Executive Director Josh Sugarman would approve of such laws, as he makes clear in a piece he wrote about black homicide rates. He said this in it. He said, successful efforts to reduce America's black homicide toll must put a focus on reducing access to firearms. Now, Sugarman presumably knows that the perpetrators of homicides in which the victims are black are themselves overwhelmingly black. He says, of single victim, single offender incidents, 91.1% of black victims are murdered by black offenders, and 82.5% of white victims are murdered by white offenders. In other words, according to Sugarman, the focus of his piece and his focus of gun control must be put on reducing blacks' access to firearms. Nathaniel Bedford Forrest would certainly be proud. So now what we have is an anti-rights organization now becoming a racist organization. Well, now how lovely is that? The Violence Policy Center, who say that they stand for sensible gun laws. Guys, there's over 20,000 on the books across the U.S. now. You have your sensible gun laws. Your mission has been completed. You can fold up shop and go away. We no longer need you. Because now, you and Mr. Sugarman here, Miss Sugarman, I'm not sure, what was the name again? Josh? Little Lady Josh Sugarman, standing there saying, blacks shouldn't have guns. And we need to do what we can to reduce the access to guns by blacks in inner cities. That's what he's saying. Now, he might sugarcoat it, but that's essentially what he's saying. Blacks in the inner city shouldn't be allowed to have guns, and we need to do our best to reduce that. Well, you can't do that without infringing on people's rights. How do we handle, guys, how do we handle getting violence and getting the degradation of society under control? Well, it ain't easy. It ain't up to the government. And if you tell them it is, you can assuredly rest they're going to screw it up and spend way too much money in the process of completely screwing it up. That's just the way the government works. The government has never, ever, ever in the history of the U.S. government run a successful and financially viable program ever. They have always overspent, and they have almost always overspent and done far worse than what the private sector could do. Don't ask them to handle this. All they'll do is just try to infringe on your Second Amendment rights the way the Violence Policy Center and the way the Brady campaign are already trying to do on a daily mission basis. Southern Poverty Law Center, same thing. They put poverty in there so that they make it sound as though there's some sort of martyrs for the underprivileged in America. Don't be fooled. So, how do we handle this? Well, it starts at the home. Now, I've spoken about Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, retired U.S. Army Airborne. He was a student of mine out at Front Sight, well, I don't know, 6 years ago maybe, 6 or 7 years ago. Very excellent, upstanding man. Excellent, upstanding man. Good guy. And Dave Grossman handed out a copy of his book on killing. He also handed out a double disc CD set called The Bulletproof Mind. The Bulletproof Mind is geared towards police when they're in officer-involved shootings. Now, somebody sent me some links. You can actually go onto YouTube and search Grossman Bulletproof Mind, and his two-hour set of discs, the audio discs, are broken down on YouTube, all in order. So that's a way to listen to the Bulletproof Mind. My suggestion is find 2 hours of time and streaming audio on the internet, go to YouTube, and search Grossman Bulletproof Mind. Start at number one, go all the way through. There should be about a dozen, because I don't think you can get more than 10 minutes on any one of those audio tracks. That's just the way YouTube works. Listen to them. And that will help understand where we need to start when it comes to getting America back into a good place where you can allow your kids. Most of you listening to the radio show, when you were kids, were allowed to go out and play, run around the neighborhood, ride your bikes for a mile or two. Now, I don't know if anybody anywhere in America allows their kids to do that, with rare exception. And has the bicycle changed? No. Has the amount of hours of sunshine changed? No. No. Has the roadways that they've been riding on changed? In some cases, yes, a little busier. But not always. So what's changed? What's changed is society. And how dirty and filthy people are in their minds and in their actions. Where can we chalk this up? Well, it's easy to see that the people that have been putting out what is referred to as entertainment out of Hollywood have gone way overboard. There's stuff that back in the 80s would have been rated X, not for sexual content, but for violence content and what people were doing on screen, their actual actions, that now is on cable TV. And in some cases, and oftentimes cases, what was rated R is now on network TV. 24, that's an entertaining show to me, but I would never, never let my kids watch it. And even so, realizing there's a number of shows similar to that sort of thing, people who watch that kind of stuff on a regular basis, you become immune and dull to the actions of people when it comes to overrunning people's rights, torture, and murder. It just starts to become regular and numb. It's shocking initially, and then it's just ho-hum from there. It's like listening to a song. The first time you hear it, you might be kind of shocked. It's really interesting. Hey. And then, you know, years go down the road and it's just normal, never catches your attention anymore. That's the way it is with exposure to violence. Same thing with video games. Exposure and overexposure to violence. Much as we have on TV and film. So getting things back, putting all of this in check, would require Hollywood find another way to make money. Video game companies to find another way to make money that people are just as interested in, yet not as numbing to the point where the rest of society is now in danger. And raising your children properly, it begins in the home. Now, I have four kids. One of my daughters, the one I took to Disneyland, she enjoys scary movies. To the point where she actually would like to see, at 10 years old, something like Saw. She thinks she'd like to see that. There's absolutely no way. Only because she's heard her older brother talk about it. There's no way. Now, if she wants to find a scary movie that is genuinely scary by surprising, but not by gore, perhaps when she's a little older. And that comes down to parenting. So, if we want to take care of problems in the inner city, that's going to come from education. That's going to come from things in the home. That's going to come from a two-parent family. Now, and I understand that in a lot of urban centers around the country, inner city areas, asking for a two-parent family is a huge deal. And it really is. To pull no punches, you can almost not find a married black couple under the age of 30 in their 20s and 30s. It just almost does not exist. They just procreate. And any guy that's got a kid with one woman, he's got kids with several others. And they're literally just spitting out these single family kids. Single parent households. And the only parent in common is the mother. In the same house. Everybody else has a different father. Alright? That is not the way American society should be going. And people conduct themselves like this because they have generations of degrading family values to almost where they're non-existent. And then oftentimes, you have parents that will sometimes work multiple jobs. They're not home with their kids. They get raised by everybody else. They get raised by the village. and the village has no good intent. The village doesn't really know what they're doing. It starts at home. It starts with education. However, when the educational system is broke, when it's also broken, you don't have any money and you don't know, you're lost in what to do. And then you have generations of people that have no idea what true family values are, too proud to listen to anybody else on family values. You just go into the toilet. We got to figure out a way to get that fixed. That will solve problems with violence in America, not just the inner cities, but violence all around. Is it going to cure it? No. Is it going to drop dramatically? Yes. Laws aren't going to do it. Stripping us of our rights are not going to do it. Trying to strip us of our rights, guys, let me give you this when it comes to the federal government. Trying to pass something like H.R. 45 and strip us of our rights or infringe upon them will only get those of us who are armed and those of us who are educated and informed to load up our guns and come shoot you. That's all it's going to do. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. Just want to let you know a couple of things. First of all, a guy that I know I worked with for a couple of years is probably one of the finest and most well-respected AK-47 gunsmiths and tuners in the nation. And I will be scheduling an interview, an on-air interview with him coming up soon. So I will let you know when AK-47 Day is coming. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be talking with him early this week and setting something up, hopefully for later this week. So I just want to give you a heads up on that. I also want to address this whole thing with subsonic rounds. I've talked a little bit about developing rounds, and I've gotten a few emails from people that have done some round development. And some of them have said things like, well, you know, I never enlarged the flash hole, and I'm not using a magnum primer. Okay, here's the deal. If you do enough research, you will find that you can get away with that for a little while sometimes until you end up with a secondary overpressure system. All right. If you don't burn all the powder immediately, which is why you would go with a larger flash hole and a magnum primer and a very fast burning powder and enough where you have at least 30 to 40% case capacity. If you don't have those, what you can end up with is second and third ignitions of powder in sections as the bullet's moving down the barrel and giving different pressures. If you don't get all of the pressure burned immediately, you're going through a long enough barrel in an uncoated bullet. You could potentially have the bullet slow down to the point or stop in the barrel because it only had maybe a third or half of the pressure to push it. It's not going fast enough, it stops. You get the secondary amount of pressure, and if it doesn't push the bullet out, it blows back into the shooter's face, blows the action, and blows the casing, and potentially the bolt. If you have enough of these pressures, the bolt lugs will start to deteriorate, they'll start to crack. Eventually that bolt will break and shoot back into your face, take out your eye. Now, I know a guy that happened to. It wasn't with a subsonic round, but it was with a 50 BMG. He lost the use of his thumb and lost his right eye, his shooting eye. And this was not more than about 2 years ago. The guy now has to shoot left-handed. Had to learn all over again. So, be very careful. Do a lot of research before you start getting into subsonic loads. And please, stay away from some of the known pitfalls. Okay? Some of the known pitfalls that we're dealing with, again, would be using just a standard primer and no enlarged flash hole. Please be aware of that. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Lenman News Hour coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.